Why don't you tell us how Downers got its start?
So I was in Me Versus Hero for about 7 years, like a pop punk band. And during the end of it, I started listening to some of the newer, like, grunge sort of shoegaze bands like Nothing and Were. And Daylight at the time, who are now Super Heaven and stuff. So we started writing some stuff like that. Did I get in touch with me and you did it, didn't we? The first EP. So we did like a DIY first EP, me and Will, and just released that for free. And then I think we tried out a few different drummers, a few different guitarists, and eventually got our lineup as it is now.
Now you guys have been around for about, you know, probably about 6-7 months now as Downers.
Yeah, I reckon so.
Now, how did Noose come about? Because when I heard it, I felt, you know, I really loved the song. And but I've also got to tell you though, man, like I really like Erased. I mean, that's like my favorite song on the album.
Yeah,
by far.
People seem to be digging that. People also seem to be digging that other one a lot, that Grown Out song as well, the last one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what's great about it is like from Grazed to Erased to Grown Out, it like the EP. I don't even know if you want to call it an EP because it's three tracks right now. But I mean, you know, it.
Hey, that was purely financial, man. Like if we could have afforded four tracks, we would have. Like,
nice. Here's what I was going to say. The three are obscenely fulfilling, and like from Grazed to Grown Out, it gets progressively darker, like monumentally each time.
Oh, sweet, man. I'm glad you think that.
Now how did that come about?
I don't know. What do you reckon, Will? You can get some inputs.
It's a strange one because we wrote it a long time ago as well, didn't we? That's an interesting like side of it, because we wrote many of them before we wrote the other.
Yeah.
So,
what? Which one did we write first, Grace?
We wrote. Was it two of the tracks on the new one? We wrote well before.
Yeah, and a lot of it changed in the studio as well, which was another thing.
So
it sort of evolved to be darker. But I think with Erased, are you into balance and composure? I kind of like that, and I kind of like the way that they sound a bit sort of like Oasis. Like they sort of sound like English indie but like heavy, like a grungy sort of mix with it, which I kind of like.
You know what I would have thought? I was gonna say a little bit of Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, people say that about I like Josh Homme, I like Queens of the Stone Age, but people say that about Grown Out as well, and it's that fuzz tone as well, using that I think we used a Swollen Pickle pedal on the album, on the EP, and a Jazzmaster as well, so it created that super almost like a distorted bass sound in a way.
Yeah. I mean, you could really pick that up, which actually makes me want to ask, being a musician myself, what kind of, you know, because I'm a guitarist, what kind of gear were you using guitar-wise and bass-wise?
Oh, I dig this. Yeah. I like talking about gear. So what did we use? For all the guitars, I think we used an American Kelly and a My Fender Jazzmaster like all the lead was done through some crazy pedals, but that's all James, so I don't really know what he used. But I used a Swollen Pickle, which is awesome, loads of chorus through a Fender Twin Reverb.
Ah, okay.
But I think he had that set up. Bob Cooper, the producer, shout out to Bobby. I think he had that separated so that some of that was coming through a Messer 4x12, like oversized cab, with like a room mic and another mic on that, and then another one coming through something else maybe. So yeah, he killed it with that fuzz tone and stuff, man.
So he basically split your guitar signal into two separate amps.
Yeah, because there's not that much overdubbing on it. There's like a left and a right for the rhythm, and I think that's it. You know, like I think maybe we put some cleans like overdubbed, but it really wasn't a lot. I don't think Bob's like a massive fan of overdubbing, but whatever he did sounded.
Well, it's good that you brought that up though, because like I'm a massive fan of splitting. You know, like my signal guitar wise, I split mine through a PV and a Marshall. You know, sweet. Like, but when bands do that, it literally almost doubles the sound.
Yeah, you know, man. So to say. Like, Is it not like Tom DeLonge or something as well? He goes, maybe Billy Joe, he goes through like a mess ahead and splits the signal to another head, another cab completely. So he's got like two whole setups, but the same signal going through.
Exactly. And it literally doubles the sound because you've got two different tones and everything else. And it just,
sure. It
just fattens everything up. It actually shines through a lot on these tracks, especially Gray's.
Oh, especially on Gray's as well. I think that Will on his bass had, what was it? I think it was a rat pedal.
Oh, okay.
So it was deep, like, I think that was split as well. So one of his signals was super clean and sort of subby. And the other one was like really almost like a distorted guitar. And that's on Gray's especially, I think.
Nice.
Now, that's what gives that tone.
And it shows too. Now, Will, what were you using bass-wise? Were you using like a I got a feeling that you were using like a Fender Jazz or a Fender P bass.
Yeah, I think it was a Fender. I think it was a P.
It was something weird. I don't think it was either though. I think it was like a weird hybrid. You know, like a.
It was strange, wasn't it?
Almost like one of those Jaguar basses that they brought out. I think it might have even been something like that.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, because you've got that Fender bell tone in your sound, which is really cool, and it really cuts through the guitars.
Yeah, I think a lot with the distortions that Bobby was talking about as well really help it to cut. It's got plenty of power, but it's also got that grit on the top end, which is, I think, discernible from the guitars as well throughout that, which I think is the beauty of the whole tone that we managed to get with that.
Yeah, that kind of Fender brightness that only...
Yeah,
only
that
they
little
get.
Bit of shine and grit on the top.
Yeah, exactly. Now I got to ask, with all the tones that you've got on these tracks, did they come out exactly as they sounded when you were writing them?
I think yes, but... I think there was a lot of experimentation along the way, which always leads to a different way of perceiving the sound. I think
different band members as well. Wasn't it? So like, when we were trying out different drummers, I think before we recorded that, Tweedy, the drummer, had only just joined a few weeks. We crammed loads of like writing into that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's such like a classic 4-to-the-4 like rock drummer as well. That's what he's used to. So he gave that whole thing a different vibe, which was sick.
Completely different to how maybe we'd envisaged it before. And especially with the previous...
Like, that keeps happening with new songs as well, though. It's like, we think of it's going to be some, you know, one type of thing. Some of the new songs sound a bit like Mars Volta or something. It's weird.
Yeah, we've gone for some...
We've gone dreamy now.
Yeah, different. And gone maybe a bit more technical, but not too technical. But like, we've taken it in a new direction still, but still keeping that same... overall aesthetic, so we're happy with the way it's going at the moment.
Now, so with the band being as new as it is, I mean what fascinates me is that you guys are literally only six, seven months old. As the vision
writing is just flowing, man, at the moment, which is like awesome. In my other bands, it's, you know, like it's taken an age. I think it took my old band like 2 years to write it. An album, man. So,
well, that was going to be my question. What's different this time around? Is it the right group of people?
We still get on as well, though. It's like we get on as... I know we've all known each other ages. We've all been in bands together before, and we're all on the same page. And we're all sort of, I don't know, more experienced now, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I think so. I think everybody's on the same page, taking it as seriously as everyone needs to take it in a band. And we're all... the three of us, me, Bob, and James... all know enough about the other side of music production and the industry and from previous projects and things like that. So it just means that we've got a better head start, I think, which has made it all work. And the writing, because we've all been in bands previously with each other in different types of music still, but we just write particularly well and easily together because we're on the same page, I think.
Nice. Now, where do you think you are at your career at this juncture, being such a new band, but with a group of seasoned veterans? Are you like at the precipice, do you think, where you're about to become where you want to be?
I don't know, man. It's one of them. Like, I don't, like, we can't sort of make people be asked about our band either. We can't make people like care about our band. But I think the main thing is like, if we're just like having fun, and like we've been playing shows recently and like really enjoying it no matter what the turnout. So I don't know, I'm just happy to like keep on writing and keep on recording and putting stuff out. We definitely want to get on some more tours and play a lot more places, but you know, that's always going to be difficult on low amounts of money as well. Like, everything was sorted for our old band, so, and we're doing this ourselves. It's like more DIY.
Well, do you like it better that way? Because I mean, you get more control though too.
It's like completely different vibe, I think. But we've definitely never had, as of yet, I don't think, a show where we've sort of come off a bit bummed out or anything. It's always been good vibes, like at each one. So
we really enjoy what we're doing, and as long as that's the case, I think we're all where we want to be, so to speak. But I mean,
don't get me wrong, I'd love it.
We can hope.
I'd love it if we got to play some really big shit and maybe got like a... Oh, sorry for that. Sorry.
Ah, that's no problem.
And if we got funded, maybe off Noose, if someone really dug it, and we got funded for a record, like a full length, that'd be like best case scenario, I think, at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we've been talking about, is what to do next.
Do the
album, basically.
We could easily do a record, I think, but that financially is like insane. I think the cheapest in the UK that you could get like a pretty good record is going to be like still going to be like $4,000 or something. So we haven't got £4,000,
which is actually like almost £8,000 in the US, or $8,000, I should say.
Exactly, and that's like, that's pretty much, I reckon, probably the cheapest you're going to get a record.
Yeah. Well, have you ever thought about what a lot more artists are doing these days with crowdfunding?
Yeah, we mentioned that, actually. I'd just be a little bit embarrassed if I was like, put it up and it's like, no, you know, like, no. And no one... And then it kept showing up on everyone's thing, like, oh, well, like, they keep posting that, let's check how much funding they've got, and it's been a month and we've got like £5 of £5,000.
I've seen that too.
That stuff works for loads of bands. I see it work all the time.
Well, yeah, and I've seen it work both ways, where you look on there and they're like 200% funded, and then I see other people that are get like, okay, they got $5.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's one of those.
Way, I think. You know, I mean, and I've seen everything in between. Well, you know what I don't understand is where you start seeing like famous artists, you know, from back in the day. I mean, I don't want to mention any names or anything, but like, you know, like that were on major labels for decades and stuff, and now they're crowdfunding.
For sure.
It's like you guys couldn't save up back in the day when you were making like $1 million a minute and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Save a bit for now type of thing. I think so, like very small amounts of this band as well is like slightly funded by our other previous ones in a way. So any stuff that we get off like iTunes from like say from my previous band, I usually just like, you know, put it into like this kind of thing. Not that it's going to be a lot, but you know, every little bit counts.
I think it's like we need to get the shows and the merchandise because that's realistically where today's
industry. No one really buys CDs.
No.
So
or music.
Or music. Yeah. No one really buys music.
Well, yeah. It doesn't really seem like like music or the actual music is the driving financial force anymore.
No, that's. I think since the digital revolution, since that's all changed, we've gone away from music being presented as pieces of art, you know, with artwork and all these different aspects.
And for sure.
And it's taken away, I think, you know, people still want that, I think, but it's, you know, there's a new generation that never held a, you know, an LP vinyl with full artwork that had that, you know, connection with the art.
That's why for Noose as well, we wanted to do... You know, like, we could have gone and photoshopped, like, a photo and, you know, made a cover, made artwork in, like, 5 minutes, but just thought it was, like, it's no, what's the point if you're only going to have us it? So we kind of, like, that photo from the front of Noose, if you've seen it, like, the Noose with the daisies on and stuff, that was, like, we made that and, like, got the daisies, put them in it and, like, took the photo and then, you know, like, developed it and stuff, so...
We take like the art side of things, you know, seriously as well. Yeah, like the aesthetic of it, the videos. Like we do everything ourselves, and we like the control that we have over it all. And I think that you know a lot of that's lost with the digital side of things. Now it's just one piece of square artwork and some tracks. And you know, I can understand how people begrudge paying for something so intangible.
Well, and also too, I remember like when I was little, like, and you know, like a band would come out with a new album, like back in the '80s. That tells you how old I am. When I was like a kid, when I was like a little kid, I would listen to REM and U2 and The Cure, you know, and Jane's Addiction and stuff. And I would get on my skateboard and go down to the record store and then get it. And then like read the covers and everything while I'm listening to it on my stereo in my room, you know. But nowadays, like people that were my age now, the way I was, you know, that were my age then, that are now, you know, they'll like, oh, I only like the first song, so I'm only gonna buy that, you know, for 99 cents.
And it's now just churning singles out, singles, blah blah blah. You know, a lot of it's been lost, I think, and I think we wanted to recapture a bit of that that feel of having a piece of.
Plus, I bet when you went to buy records, you know, sometimes there'd be something else that the guy at the record shop would like recommend if you liked that type of thing, and then you'd have this new band that you'd never heard of, and you know, you get stoked about that. Where that kind of thing's gone a bit as well, but then again, it's kind of good as well.
Level because now you can search the internet. This.
I mean, Spotify tells you, doesn't it? Spotify is like, oh, you like this band? There's another band. You know, you might like them. So I guess it's good in many ways, but you know. Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent point they bring up, because I like the one thing I loved about going down to the music store was the guys that worked there. Like they would do exactly what you say. I'm like, oh man, these guys are touring with them this summer. Check them out and stuff. And
exactly,
it would be more than what Spotify does. It'd be a conversation, or the guy would, or the guy would stop whatever's playing in the store and then play that.
Yeah. That connection's gone with the actual people, isn't it? Really, it's all just online now. But I mean, there's still. I mean, we played our release in a really little cool like independent like record store the other day, and you know that was quite near where we live, and you know that was cool. People were going in there as well, buying records that weren't there for us, like. But yeah, it's good that still happens, man. That's cool that one's been there since like 79 or something. Yeah, so it's gone through the whole, you know, the golden age of it, I guess, and then.
Still standing strong now.
Still standing strong, yeah. It's cool. That was cool to see, actually.
Nice. Now, do you think that, I mean, well, you know, I've got to ask, where do you think the record stores in general, you know, are going to be 10 years from now? Because it always seems like, you know, they're on their way out. Because if you remember 20 years ago when dual cassettes came out, and then 15 years ago when computers made it so where you can rip CDs. You know, it always seems they survive.
Mm-hmm. I think that CDs are slowly becoming a dead medium, but I think that it sounds cheesy, but I think vinyl will live forever, I reckon. I think that that is a timeless medium, that as long as there's DJs and as long as there's music fans, I think it'll still be there. I think it will. I think so. Like, I mean, I have a collection, and I know people younger than me who have collections. I don't think it's a generational thing. I don't think it'll completely disappear. But also, streaming is the new thing. So it's all about subscriptions and things like that. So
I think it shows people are still going to buy that. I mean, you can offer like downloads and stuff, I guess, or give them websites and stuff. But I kind of feel weird if we play live and we're like, you know, check out this EP on downersband.bandcamp.com. I feel stupid saying that. I'm just like, well, there's a rip. We've got records or we've got tapes, so like,
so
buy that.
And don't you think vinyl has a tone to it, like a sound, like my favorite albums are from the 70s when, you know, they were mixed for vinyl and they were using the old tube style, you know, mixing boards.
Hold on, there's a plane going over. Yeah, we're like, where we are is like right by our airport, so yeah. But sorry, carry on. What were you saying?
No, what I was saying was, is like my favorite, you know, my favorite records, I mean, it's great that you think that vinyl is the way to go, because I think that as well, because, you know, I love the tone that the vinyl gives it. And it's like, you know, my favorite albums, you know, my timeless favorite albums are the ones from the, you know, from the mid to late 70s that were mixed for vinyl, you know, utilizing the old
mastered for vinyl,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, they were using the old tube mixing boards and everything that just gave it like a warmth to it.
Yeah, I think our first EP, the self-titled one, we gave it away for free before this new one came out. I'm pretty sure that was mastered for vinyl on Struder tape.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure our friend Grant Berry like mastered that for us, and I'm pretty sure he used tape to master it.
Oh, so it was done analog.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive it was. In fact, I'm sure it was. I remember him listing what he used to master it. Yeah, and it was used, Struder tape was used, so that was cool.
Well, don't you think digital, I mean, I don't know, maybe like I said, it's my age because I'm 42, but I mean, I always kind of think...
chicken.
Nah, more like fall hen, man. But, I mean, but no, I remember like when I got my first CD player when I was like 17, and I just remember it was too crispy. It sounded, you know, I mean, yeah. it was digital.
Depends what music it is though, doesn't it? I reckon for rock and stuff, then yeah, it's like digital is sometimes a bit weird for like rock, but
it doesn't, it's not very
electronic music. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. For electronic stuff, it is digital music. That's the thing.
It's created digital.
I think for analog music, the analog sound is really the way to go if you want that real.
But we do a lot of electronic music as well, like, well, Will and James a lot more than me now, but yeah, they still do that a lot.
And I digitally master those tracks,
plugins and stuff
like that. Yeah, okay. Using those plugin chains. So but with analog instruments and that warm sound, like when you want that feel, I think definitely analog is the way to go. And then as you say, vinyl does have that tone.
Which albums were you talking about when you were saying your favorite albums from the mid 70s to late 70s? Albums, man.
Like I was big, you know, here's how eclectic I was even back then. I was big into bands like Yes and Led Zeppelin, but then I also got into the Sex Pistols and stuff like that. Because I mean, I hated Black Sabbath, but I loved the Ozzy solo stuff.
Right. Okay.
You know. So I said,
you didn't like the Tommy Iommi riffs? No.
Not really. I like Tommy. I like Tommy Iommi, but I didn't like his guitar tone like back in the day. I liked it when he developed it later. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
But then like I was also like a closet Bee Gees fan too.
So nothing wrong with them harmonies, man.
No. But then, you know, I mean, it was crazy. I would listen to Cheap Trick and stuff like that, and then then when nobody was around, I'd put them on because it was my mom's record.
For sure, man.
But serious, man. Like the Brothers Gibbs, they could harmonize like you wouldn't believe, man. You know, it's funny because like I'd say that now and I'm cool, but like I said it back in the day, and everybody's like, "Oh, you're gay," you know. I did the same thing with Duran Duran. Believe it or not, like nobody's around.
Wrong with that.
Oh yeah, like nobody's around. I'd like go like you know put in like Hungry Like the Wolf or something.
That's it, yeah. Like Rio or something.
Yep, exactly. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, with you being an indie artist and everything, I get a lot of this stuff because we deal with, we interview signed artists, we interview indie artists, and I always get let me say this, I never get the answer I think I'm gonna get. So let me ask you this obligatory question: if like Virgin or Atlantic or CBS or Sony or Universal or Vivendi came up to you and offered you the standard first record contract, would you take it?
I'd probably have to think quite hard about it. I'd have to be like, look, Mr. Virgin Boy, I'm going to have to call you back tomorrow because this is a big one. But I see it like now with bands doing that type of thing now. From some English bands recently that we used to play with and stuff, they've all been signed by like bigger labels now. So it's like, you see the deals that they're getting, they are. Like, they seem pretty harsh, those first album deals, like 360 deals, etc. But, I mean, they're the big players, aren't they? That's the only way you're going to get into that game.
How else do you do it?
How else are you going to play Wembley? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, we want it to be fun, and the most fun we could have would be to play Wembley. So if it's not about the cash and it's about the love of the music, then it's one of them.
Yeah, that's also it.
I'm sure there's an all right wage from you.
Universal, even.
I'm sure it's all right, but I don't think it's that great still, though. Like, I know, you know, like I say, I know a couple of bands have been signed, you know, recently by big labels, and the members themselves is still, they're not going to be on any more money than they were on before, but the band itself will do better. So, yeah, you know, it's all about the band, I guess. Else, why would you be making the music?
See, I mean, I've always gotten different answers. I mean, that, like I said, that's a totally different answer than I've gotten from anyone else. I've had some people, like I said, Billy Sheehan's one of the guys that we interviewed that was on a major label. If you remember him, he's bass player extraordinaire. I'm sure you've heard of him, Will. You know,
yeah, but, I know Billy Sheehan, yeah.
But he's like, I would never, you know, be on a label again, screw that, you know, and all this stuff. But,
he's
so got his money. Yeah, but he's got his money, though.
And this is the thing, and also what he got was they utilized the label for whatever it was that they could provide for the band. So if you get in there and you get your first album contract and you get your promotion and suddenly you're a household name because of the label, you know, you only have to go through that for so long. And then you've got the platform. In this day and age, the digital platform is there for you once you have a following to be able to utilize that if you're smart. Do you know what I mean? So I think, you know, there's pros and cons with all of it, but you've got to do what you've got to do. That's the way we see it.
I would hate like handing in a record, though, an album of tunes, and the bigger labels going like, yeah, we don't like this. And you're like, what?
And well,
like,
yeah, that, record it again. That's what the chances are. That's what they're going to do, because I mean,
exactly.
They're going to come.
So yeah, that would suck.
That's the downside too.
But then we just get, you know, you just get like Britney Spears' songwriter on board with you, and then bang, number one hit. Taylor Swift's songwriter with you, and kill it.
Drake's ghostwriter.
Drake's current issues. Drake's ghostwriter. Yeah, could get him on board.
Well, I mean, here's the evil thing that I get a lot of flack for. Sometimes I can see the label side of it, because when they give you the money, they're giving you a loan, but they're giving you X amount of dollars to make something. And if they're not breathing down your neck, or if they're breathing down your neck, it's because they've given that money out 1,000 times and then come back later. Yeah. And then like, you know, well, where's the record? Well, we didn't get any money for it. That's what the advance was for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. What band was it from Manchester? Sean Ryder. Why can't I think of that? Happy Mondays. Like, I'm sure I remember seeing that they got given like loads of money and were, like, went off to like an island somewhere and just like spent it all. And the rest of the label was like, where's that? £250,000 or something crazy. Well, good.
Man, I know a local rap group in Chicago that got signed to Sony, and they got a $50,000 advance. And what they did was, they didn't know that was for making the album.
Amazing.
So what they did was they rented a house in Addison, which is a suburb of Chicago, and through like a $50,000 pool party.
No.
Amazing party. But yeah. So, and they actually came back like the next month and told them they were ready to start making a record, and they just needed the money for it. And they were like, well, that's, we just gave you 50 grand.
Oh my God.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane.
So, you're
pulling the papers then, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. They were like, I mean, serious. And then they're like, they're not the tough boys anymore. It's like, now they're all scared and shit because the lawyers are talking to them and stuff. And, you know, like you didn't even get a Pro Tools set up. You guys just threw a party.
It's pretty hilarious story, man. It's like,
well, rock and roll.
They're basically, yeah, the probably the worst idea you could possibly have, I reckon, if you got an advance.
Exactly. But
good night, though.
Well, but that, oh yeah, yeah. Like, you know, they consider it a funeral party now, but but no, I mean, so like, even let me ask you a follow-up question, though, about this. You know, giving stories like that, would you still give up partial control of your product?
I reckon we're super sensible, though, because we're like not really kids anymore. So I reckon I think we wouldn't be idiots with money, but
he's saying, would we compromise the product for the money, is what it's asking. Right. I think we would make sure that we could find maybe a happy medium, because we write with the intention of it being
good and accessible.
Catchy, and we write with us with a songwriting sensibility that makes us want to make tunes that hopefully would satisfy those.
Yeah, underneath it all of our songs, they're just pop songs, really, aren't they? They're just like miserable pop songs, like Smiths or something, just with loads of distortion, like, really.
Well, I mean, like, what, you know, so, okay, let's say worst case scenario, like, okay, pretend I'm the label exec and I just come barging in after the deal sign and say, okay, fire that guy, cut your hair, and then change the settings on your guitar.
Suck. Especially if you're all, obviously we're all friends as well, that would be the worst if they were like, oh yeah, the band's all right, but he doesn't look right, you know, he's slightly too whatever, that'd be the worst. That's when you'd instantly run into problems, in fact.
Well, think about it, that's how Ringo got in.
Who's going, sorry?
That's how Ringo got in.
Oh yeah, of course, man. And he wasn't even a good drummer. I think did he just look right or something? I don't know.
He looked right, and he was passable on the drums, but on their first stuff, you hear a lot more of Pete Best than you think.
Right.
Really? I love that quote from John Lennon, where he was asked if Ringo Starr was a good drummer, and he was the best drummer in the world. That's it. And he answered with, "He's not even the best drummer in the Beatles." That's like a classic answer.
Nice, man. John had a mouth, man. It was great.
Funny guy, man. That's that northwest England thing, though. I guess is it northwest? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, it's not far from where we are now. It's like less than an hour away, maybe about an hour away.
Now, what do you guys have coming up? I know we talked earlier about like a full length album and stuff. I mean, you guys are in the songwriting process, but what else do you guys have coming up? What are your plans for the next 6 months?
I want to get into the studio on our own and do like a covers EP where we each just pick a song, literally any musical style song, and do that. We were on about that a bit ago, but I think we should do that next. But we just want to get on some live shows. We've been playing sort of one a week or two a week or whatever, but like we want to get on some tours and stuff and get that going. So I think September, I think we'll be touring for a bit of that.
Then September and October probably.
Which that's still in the works.
Yeah,
that's still in the works. We'll be touring like the UK September 5th to September 8th, but all the dates and stuff will be put on the Facebook in the next week, I think. So that'll be cool.
Nice, nice. Now, do you have any idea, like with your cover EP, like what songs or what artists you want to cover?
I've got a couple in mind. We spoke about it ages ago. We were going to do, what's that Portishead song called? Glory Box. We wanted to do Glory Box by Portishead, you know, that Give Me a Reason to Love You song. We wanted to do that, but like really shoegazy, loads of like fuzz and stuff. And I don't know. Like I think each of our choices would be completely different. I think James would probably pick a Manson song if you know Manson. I don't know what you'd pick. What would you pick?
I don't know.
You could pick like an electronic song or something and make it. You just do whatever you want, can you?
Yeah, I don't know.
You never know. Aphex Twin song or something.
You know who I think you guys would do great? Like, I've been thinking of this since, you know, before the interview when you first brought up the cover album and stuff. You know, I mean, like, it's just a suggestion, but immediately the song that popped into my head that you guys would probably knock out of the ballpark is David Bowie's Modern Love.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm into Bowie, man. I reckon I could do that.
No, I mean, like, totally change it. Like, you know, no saxophone or anything like that. Just do it as you guys would do it.
For sure, man.
Imagine replacing the bits with, like, James's lead. It could sound insane.
Yeah, swapping out the instrumentation for, like, lead guitar could sound awesome, for sure. I agree.
I think you guys would knock that out of the ballpark, man.
Well, maybe. Maybe that will be intended. Maybe it'll be a 5-track EP then.
There you go. There you go.
You can, and then you can have your choice on it as well.
Nice. Yeah, just send me a copy and we'll run it, man.
Of course, man.
So, well, where can we find you guys online? Our Downers Online.
You can get us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/DownersRuleOK. Twitter,
Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram are both Downers Band. And
I've put Noose up on Bandcamp now as well. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Google Amazon, Play, Amazon,
all that,
all the big boys. Mm-hmm.